Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And on today's Unspun podcast, we got good news. The shutdown is over in the U.S. because it was affecting Canadians and, in particular, people trying to travel. But we also have so much high drama, whether it's at the municipal level, the provincial level, or, George, at the federal level. It's actually theater today on
Unspun.
There's so much.
We're taking on a journey today.
Okay. Well, I mean, let's start with the federal budget, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all of the pearl clutching and the hand wringing over the idea that there would be an election, another election, and a Christmas time election at that. No.
Right. No.
I watched this all live. Did you watch it? Were you watching?
Parts of it, yeah. I didn't watch the actual final debate, but there was never going to be an election. Nobody can afford an election. The Liberals are the only ones who can maybe afford an election.
Exactly, which is why Mark Carney was walking around like, Prime Minister Mark Carney, excuse me, why he was walking around going, I think we're good. Like, he did not have a posture of somebody who was like, this government's going to fall today. No.
He'd probably get a giant majority if he had an election. So, you know, there's that too at this point.
Well, Poilievre's numbers are tanking.
Yeah.
They're even, I mean, crazy worse. But so on actual budget day in Parliament and the lead up to the bells tolling. And it was funny because Richard Gere joined David and Rosie, I think, on the panel in the Parliament building, like outside of the room.
What?
Yeah. Richard Gere was there to like speak up for human rights in Tibet and a whole bunch of other stuff. But he basically like was on the show and they were like, okay, segment's over. And he's like, no, I'm Richard Gere. I'm going to bring people in and say hi to them. So there was parts of it that were like, you can't stop watching. But I was doing the working around the house and work from home stuff with it on in every room. So I like stayed up on it for hours. And when it got down to the vote, I learned a lot about Canadian politics, even on top of what you've taught me over the last, more than 5 years that we've been doing this now. The minutia and the spin and the drama and the theater and the, everybody kind of knows what's already going to happen here. But there's always a chance it might not. It's kind of like why they play the games in the sports. In the final, they needed one non-liberal member to vote yes for this budget and two abstentions. And if that happened, then the numbers would pan out that the budget would pass and there would be no election. So as we're going through the roll call, right? Everybody stands up and gives their yay or their nay by name. So everybody knows who everybody's voting for and whatnot. And then there were people who were voting on the app online, because ever since COVID, that's a thing. You can vote without being present. And so we're watching this all happen. And I wish I knew the other conservative member. He's a senior member. Damn it, I don't have his name off the top of my head, because Andrew Scheer was just like, it was classic. They're holding up their phones going, Mr. Speak, I couldn't use the app while they're sitting in chambers. And everybody's like, what? You're here. Why would you try and use the app? Turns out they were standing, allegedly, on the other side of the curtain, waiting to hear how the vote was going to go so that they could hold off in the event that Elizabeth May didn't stand up and say, I don't like this budget, but I will do it. Yes. As opposed to there's nothing in here for the environment. So no, she said yes. Wild. And then there were two abstentions. So for whatever reasons, two,
which is a vote in favor,
right?
Yeah.
So there's the three. So now these two conservatives could come in and go, we vote nay.
Classic.
Right. So take the spin out of that.
Well, I mean, it is what it is, right? So they just didn't want to vote. They knew that if it didn't go the wrong way, they didn't want to call an election because they can't afford it. They know their leader's in trouble. The Green Party certainly doesn't care. They don't spend much money anyways. The NDP can't afford it. They don't even have a leader. So you have three parties, and then the Bloc are, clearly opposed. They don't have, they don't care. So, I think that it was, it's just a way to go to your local. I didn't support the budget, so, But if they had to, they would have. One of them would have. And they could have split the vote, and they would have said, they would have had something. I had to do it because, you know, Canada, blah, blah. They would have gone some. They would have had it all pre-written messaging if they had to go there. But yeah, it's very tricky. I would see that. You see it all the time in politics. You don't see it so blatantly. Usually you can be more discreet. It's strange that, you know, in City Council of Vancouver, in most councils, but certainly in Vancouver, you have a thing on your desk and you push a button.
Right.
And vote yes or no or abstain. And then it comes up on the screen, the vote, who voted for what, right? And it's all electronic and you can see it and you can see who voted what. And they don't do that. They still do the whole, the process is still so clunky. And because you have to be at your desk, either unless you're offsite, which they allow now, which they didn't when I was in the city council, but you have to be sitting at your desk to actually vote. You have to be in the room and you can't miss it. You just can't. If you miss it, then you're not there. That's not abstention. That is, you know, missing the vote.
You're not included.
Not even included. And that's really bad, but an important topic. So, yeah, it's politics.
It is politics. I did also find it interesting that immediately following the vote and the budget passing, the first to speak was actually interim NDP leader Don Davies, who did not support the budget. However, had two members who abstained, which is a yes vote, because, and I actually like the messaging, and there was one other NDP leader who was very articulate in his response and addressing. It didn't feel like spin, and I could be just getting the wool pulled over my eyes, but it felt like they were actually just like, yeah, we do not agree with this budget. We think it's bad for Canada, but we've also gone into to our constituents and asked them what they want. And they agree that this budget isn't great, but they also don't think that now is the time for Canadians to go to the polls. So will we, prop up this government ongoing? Because that's the slight that it goes against the NDP, right? With the minority, the whole supply agreement.
Well,
They
have that, do they? I don't think they have an agreement.
They don't. They don't. But it was like the questioning they were getting was like, does this mean you're going to, and the barking from the press gallery was quite something. They were not having it, but made it entertaining. But these politicians were standing there going, listen, I know you're trying to make this a sound bite, but I'm telling you, we don't like the budget, but we have supported it being passed by a slim margin because we know that we have to go back to our constituents and say, we're not going to the polls. We heard you, and we're not going to topple this government on this issue to send us back to the polls at this time where we're dealing with imminent threat from the White House and beyond. So I felt proud of the process to some degree because Pierre Poilievre is going to be Pierre Poilievre when he talks about stuff, it's going to be the same sort of rhetoric speak. But there are others who are like, we're trying to do our best here, but we don't agree. But I mean, we're trying to do what our people say they want.
It's painful times in so many levels. But you got to suck it up sometimes and do it for the good of the team, right? I think that's kind of, and I think there's a lot of forgiveness for any of these candidates, no matter where you are on the political party side, as this won't, like, next year may not be so easy, but this year, totally get it. Let's just get to work. Our focus is all of Canada. And I think that would be the simple argument they would make. Look, I didn't like this budget, but opposing it would be an opposition, would be a support to Trump, and I'm not certainly going to do that. And I think that would be good messaging, unless you're in a riding that has a lot of Trump supporters, which there are a few.
A
couple in Alberta.
Right. And I mean, go for it. Be yourself, right? But I mean, the mass majority of Canadians, with proven by the fact that travel to the U.S., snowbird travel to the U.S. is down 25% over last year, which was gutted. Like, we're at the point where some very red state Republican governors and some mayors are doing news stories in Canada about how much we want our Canadians back and actually saying things like, you know, you're really hurting people here in Florida. It's like, yep,
Welcome to our world.
We know.
I know. We're not budging. We're not budging at all.
Not budging.
Really. Yeah.
It's not happening.
It's interesting.
Yeah. It's really quite, it's something to watch. Okay. So let's go back to provincial politics then. So,
well, we got kind of provincial federal with the pipeline, right?
With the pipe. Right. Okay. So
a bit of both.
Do you want to set this up? I mean,
it happened this morning. I mean, we've heard this pipeline coming. And from Alberta to the coast of BC, and oh, shocker, our provincial government's against it, and apparently so are the First Nations. But that's a negotiation tactic. But the NDP, who also were opposed to what was used to be called the Kinder Morgan pipeline, they were opposed to Site C. They were opposed to LNG. They're opposed to a nice bridge to Delta. They were opposed to. I mean. Do these guys have any ideas of how to build big? You know, this country is made of big projects, and that we have a lot of. And if we don't do that, you're not going to have your healthcare. You're not going to be able to have your schooling systems. And this is how we pay for things in Canada. And I know that there's this issue with regards to the no tanker ban on the coast, but tankers are. We talked about this last week about tanker technology, and it's a risk, yes, but the risk is not huge. And the risk we're taking is potentially the dismantling of Canada.
I will jump in. One of the things that I saw, and you're bang on with all of that, one of the things that I saw this morning on that subject was the actual proposed route. And initially, it goes, straight across. If you're looking at the map of Canada, and it goes from Alberta straight across to BC, where, Kitimat. But then body of water in question is one of the most dangerous bodies of water in between Haida Gwaii and the coast of British Columbia. Like it's really what many people point to. So on the map, the proposed map for this pipeline, it goes due north from Kitimat for a significant amount of time to then go off the north coast, almost like just south of Alaska.
Prince George. Right. Yeah.
It's like, oh, wow. Okay. I mean, how many nations, territories would that cross?
And if we had a better relationship with America, we could have sent it straight to the U.S. potentially and have it there. But we are where we are. It's
just interesting that there's there's some kind of like,
well, they're looking at
we're trying to make it.
Yeah,
so
which
it's not
First Nations? The pipeline can be pretty flexible as far as the route, and then sorry NDP, but the federal government controls the waterways off the foreshore. So you can't, if they decide that they want to put tankers in international waters or in our waters, they can do that. And I think that's where the NDP's argument and the environmentalists who are adamant that there's no way that they're going to have, I would say it's going to happen. And it's going to get the funding, and it'll be great prosperity for Canada, everybody.
Then you come to the NDP in British Columbia, and David Eby just celebrating his anniversary of becoming premier, mm-hmm. and having his leadership review. Is it mm-hmm. no? Is
mm-hmm.
it
yeah, they're,
yeah.
Their annual endorsement.
Annual endorsement, right? And it was resounding. That mm-hmm. I mean, it's safe to say that it's resounding that he is. There's approval. His caucus is on side. Unlike that of John Rustat, again, the BC Conservative leader, finding himself up against it. But you called this,
6 months ago. I mean, I got it wrong. Well, I'll give you
everybody.
I know I've had some direct messages laughing at me saying, because I said he'd be out in 2 weeks or at least announced. Yeah. But, he should have been. And he's just pushing back. And now there's 30 constituency associations that have signed a formal request that there be a leadership race. And so, it's not good. It's not looking good. So you can try to hold on as long as you can, Johnny Boy. But I see the writing on the wall. I can't think of any leader that come back from these kinds of things. It just doesn't happen. You're done. You're toast. Once your caucus is out, you're out.
Yeah.
You just can't turn that around. So it's only a matter of time, and we'll have a leadership race, and it's going to be interesting who jumps in there. We hear rumors of even Brad West. You're like, how would that work? I mean, he's a union guy, works for one of the unions, and I'm trying to figure out how that would work, but it'll be interesting pies. Well, we have it's you know, we'll get to the city, but you know, new parties, you got what's your face, Dallas Brody's party, you got the Green Party, you got so it's like, oh my God, so many parties.
So
In
many
America, it's
parties.
not, you're not allowed to have so many parties. Two parties, that's all we get.
That's it.
That's all you can
And if
have.
you don't pick one of those, you're an independent.
That's
That's it.
right. You don't
That's
have a
it.
choice.
Okay.
So
Speaking
it's going to be
of too many
interesting.
parties and too many people.
Although I saw another story briefly about the EV funding was taken away. I think it's ironic that we have this leader who said no pipelines, no pipelines. Oh, but also no EV regulations anymore. To 2035 goals gone.
I saw Richard Zussman's story on that on Global. By the way, Richard Zussman has wrapped up his time at Global. That was his last report there. I want to shout out to Zuss. He's awesome and a great colleague. I know you and I have worked with him a lot. Super good. But in that story that he did on the EV mandate being dropped, it cut to a no word of a lie, natural gas flame outside of
Haha,
the
of the
government
legislature.
buildings. It's like,
Yeah. I love it.
what? I think that was a little bit of genius irony added to that story. Because you're right. But I'll go back to the fact, and I'm a huge supporter of driving a vehicle. For me, it's a plug-in hybrid situation, right? I love my plug-in in my Prius Prime. I mean, it's a workhorse of a car. And I very rarely go to a gas station, like very rarely. But I do have to plug it into my house, so I have to have the parking spot that goes with it, which is a little bit stressful, whatever, because there aren't enough charging stations. There aren't enough places for people to use. I mean, per capita globally, Vancouver has the highest number of Teslas on the planet. And we have basically nowhere to charge them. Like,
It's
so
challenging. I just got an electric car, by the way. I just bought a new one, a
did you?
VW. I did a VW electric, and it's a bit
All
challenging. It's
electric.
not as hard as the Tesla, but it's because you have to, you know. But it does, if you're willing to wait 8 hours to charge your car. So, because I don't have a charging station in my building, which is dumb, but
Yeah, see? That's the example. Like, why isn't
Keep
every
trying.
government building full of charging stations before there's a mandate? Like, why wouldn't every municipal, provincial, and federal piece of property? And I wrote this in the Orca when I was doing my weekly column there, is I see the charging stations that are at the elementary schools around my neighborhood, but they're only there for teachers. Well, why all summer long they sit there
Really?
unused? Yeah.
That's
Like,
interesting.
why aren't there charging stations in these parking lots that the communities who pay the taxes, that pay for the schools, can then swipe their credit card and pay for the electricity? It's not like everybody's looking for it to be free, but give people places to charge their vehicles. Come on.
I will say they have the City Hall has some of the best chargers in the city, fastest
Right.
chargers at city in Vancouver. So well
Can
done,
anybody
city.
use them?
I did. Well, I am. But they're kind of hidden, so people don't know they're there. But I mean, if you have an electric
Hospitals
car,
have them. Hospitals
hospitals
do.
have them, and then there's
Yeah.
a lot of Save On Foods have them, but they're the really slow ones. So you plug it in,
They're
and you're like
the trickle.
8 kilometers in 8 hours or whatever. So,
Yeah.
but it's I just think it's ironic. Here's a party that's talking about the environment
Yeah.
on one side of their face, and then saying, "But we're against pipelines. We're canceling our EV environmental." Thing and we're also don't want a pipeline. So like, what do you stand for? Anything? Like, so what? If you care about the environment, if you want cleaner air, the fastest way to do that is to have mass transportation and electric cars. Sorry, that's the biggest polluter is really the cars driving around on our highways that they're building like crazy. The NDP, that's all they've done is build roads. That's the biggest projects is the bridge to the New West and the highway to Hope or whether it's like Chilliwack or Abbotsford, that
Yeah,
separation of the highway.
that
That's
should have been done
that's
nine.
what you well done. You really showed. And then I guess you could argue the SkyTrain to Langley. So which was, already
Right.
kind of pre-approved. But
I will add in just because they did have to rebuild all the highways in the interior of our province after atmospheric rivers, and then they also had to deal with all the forest fire. We've had some pretty significant natural disasters
it's a
as
good
well.
thing we have lots of resources that pay for those things. Oh, wait.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm not saying it's an excuse. I'm just adding that there's also that, like, the taxpayer is exhausted. I know, I know. let's talk municipal. And I know there's a lot of people who are like, thank God you didn't start in Vancouver. But Mayor Ken Sim.
Well, the budget is, you know, happened last kind of last week, the first presentation of the budget.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things I think I brought up was, you know, the fact that the, so he'd zero means zero, that whole, you know, Ken Sim thing. But the police budget went up by 4.8%. And so why weren't they held to account? And I saw an interview with Stephen Quinn from CBC and the mayor, and oh my God, it was painful. He didn't answer the question, but Stephen was drilling him on that question. Like, did you, how hard did you go after the police to try and find places to, you know, cut, to slash? They got a, you know, they've had the budget, biggest budget increases of all. And he said, oh, yeah, I did. I asked him some tough questions, but he didn't. What? Oh, I'll get back to you. I'll get back to you on what I asked him.
What? I'll get back to you?
Yeah, it's like, and what he should have said, of course, is like, look, I think people want crime to go down in this city, and I'm arguing that the investment in the police is the way to do that. And so if you think that's wrong, you tell me, but I'm telling you right now, people in the city have told me that crime is a real problem and they want police to be a priority. So no, I didn't cut their budget. In fact, I think I gave them more, and I think the people in the city support that. That's your answer, Ken. Not, right. Oh, I'll get back to you. I don't know. Didn't ask some tough questions. Yeah, the tough question is, how do we deal with the province, the federal government, not dealing with criminals? And why are we, can't we yeah. arrest these guys and keep in jail? You know, I would say that the tough question I would ask the police is, I would say, I don't care if they get out of jail every time you put them in there. Just keep putting them in there. Arrest, put them in, arrest, and let the province and the federal government deal with the overload of people that we're arresting. Because the only way to stop crime is to show that there's a policing system and that there are repercussions for you being a criminal and selling drugs in SROs in the downtown and creating little crime syndicates per building in the downtown and in Yale Town. These guys, they have these mafia guys. There's gangs control. Each building gets their own person. The person rents a unit, and there they become the building drug dealer. It's ridiculous. And they're barely touching the surface on dealing with this. And I think that's what people in Vancouver want.
And it's in plain sight. And everybody knows.
Yes.
And nobody's doing anything about it. And that, by the way, that happens across the province. And, you know, with the two RCMP officers that are stationed in pick a place, they can't do anything about it. Because
they say, go to Vancouver.
Because they can't, the
yeah
law enforcement at every level is challenged by the overwhelming
right
number of, I mean, look what's happening in Surrey and now a little bit in Abbotsford with this extortion stuff. Like, it's just a matter of time before it spreads beyond that, because it's working in that small portion of our large community, and people are like, well, it's not happening to me. It's like, well,
guess
until it, when?
And I would argue, and I've talked about this, it's not just about policing, right? So there is data that shows if you beautify a neighborhood, crime goes down by a significant amount. So the easiest budget to increase with very little money is engineering, which is in charge of our sidewalks and our streets and potentially some, we own a lot of buildings. A lot of buildings on the downtown east side that look like crap are owned by the city of Vancouver. Get some paint, clean up the sidewalk, power wash neighborhoods, keep people moving forward. Like in our building in Yale Town, we have security 24 hours a day now because we have so many problems. But guess what? People aren't allowed to loiter and sleep on our door. Sorry, move along. This is what you have to do in order for them to go, okay, I guess I better go find a place to sleep, which there are places for them to sleep. They just don't want to go there because they can find places and nooks and crannies and do drugs and have no repercussions, and nobody's moving along. The police aren't willing to do that anymore. And so
there's no more boots on the ground.
The police. Yeah. That's the question. Yeah. Where I could sit here for a month and not see a police officer walk by my door.
And it used to be like when the population was 1/10 of what it is now, the metropolitan nature of this city, there used to be.
Remember the bike cops?
Police presence.
The bike cops were everywhere.
More. Yeah.
Bike cops were really effective. They rode around. They were always riding around in the downtown core.
Yeah.
Presence is a big part of it. I don't, you know, and
but not, they're not
it's
allowed.
Not just about throwing money at it, Kenny Boy.
No.
Second time I've told him Kenny Boy, or that was Johnny Boy before, and it's Kenny Boy.
And he's, you say, you hear that the current mayor is going to run again.
That's the word on the street. He's committed to running in the next election. We have another mayoral candidate. I think I said, I forget his name. I sent it to you.
What's the name? Yeah,
for one city. He's going to run for the leadership of one city. It's a left-wing party in Vancouver.
His name is William Azarov.
Azarov. So he's running for leadership, the lead mayoral candidate for one city. Has been endorsed by the one city candidate on council, and Lucy, sorry, I forgot her last name. So it's how many candidates are running for mayor? And we're not even, it's like 11 months away. Got like 10, 12. Parties are five, six political parties, liberals, conservatives, one city, Scope, ABC,
That's why
Green,
people don't know what to do at a
NPA.
municipal election. That's why people, we have to remind the people that you must vote municipally. You have to show up, know who you're going to vote for. And at the very least, you turn over the ballot and look at the questions on the back, and you don't have to mark the
Turn over
full
the
ballot.
ballot. Turn over
That's right. Oh my
the
gosh. It's
ballot.
built to be overwhelming, and the questions are built to be confusing the way they're worded. So go in, take your time. You don't need to check every box that's offered to you. I don't know who's on the school board. I don't know who's da da da. Like, don't. But you must vote. You must show up and you must vote. I believe that. I really do.
100%.
And I have a newly minted voter in my house today because my
All
son,
right.
I know he's very motivated.
Let me brainwash him.
I know exactly who he's not voting for.
Oh,
He's very vocal about that. Let's talk about votes in the States. The
well,
government shutdown ended because
and they got what?
the
Did
Democrats just
they get what they
seemed to
wanted?
cave. I don't know.
It appears they didn't get much commitment for their healthcare stuff, so it looks like they're just back to whatever.
We're
We
going to
got
be
this
back
vote
in the
on
same position
Epstein,
in
though. That was
January.
interesting. The Epstein vote and Trump flipping on that. I look forward to the black, redacted document or doctored document that will actually be made public by, an attorney general who's completely compromised,
Oh,
along with
totally.
other people. It's just like this thing is going to be so doctored and black and whited out. It'll be ridiculous.
I listen to Kara Swisher. Swisher?
Isn't
Swish.
that a isn't
Kara
that some
Swisher. Yeah, she's a
swish
podcaster.
twang?
She's very, very smart.
Oh
And
yes,
one and she's digitally smart. Digital, that's her.
her thing.
She
She hits
yes.
the groove of the new age of media.
Yeah, she's predicted many things. She's been very on point years out and talks very frankly on the subject. I enjoy her. She does a pivot podcast. She's very good. But when she was speaking on this subject, I think she was on with Laura Coates on CNN. And Laura, as a former DOJ prosecutor, like she is a lawyer, said, "What about this compromised attorney general and the DOJ and what we're seeing, the Department of Justice?" And Kara said, "Listen, if they're super redacted in this day and age, someone will leak the actual documents." Like, and it takes us back to like the WikiLeaks thing. Like, we're living in a time where there are no secrets when the videos, and we're living in a video age, was one
That's
of
why
the
it's
things she said.
just
It's
release
coming
everything.
out.
It's way
It's
easier to
coming
just
out.
release it. Who was the person? And I thought you were going to go to that story about the piggy comment. So I want to get
Oh,
your
right.
take on that. What the hell? And
I.
where, as a woman, because I saw a few people posting on various social platforms, women, people, other journalists saying, who don't work at the White House, who don't have to, saying enough is enough. I mean, this is, Rosie O'Donnell's been getting this abuse for years, but now he's taken it to a new level. I mean, it's shocking.
Mary Bruce asking unbelievable questions and being told that she's fake news, ABC should be fired, they should lose their license. Mary Bruce, way to go in asking the tough questions in the face of just so much. It was an honest journalistic question that should have been asked, and the response that she received from the President of the United States was so disgusting. And just one of many times that he has belittled women in particular, because he is a misogynist. That is not an allegation. It is in front of our eyes. We have to acknowledge what we see. But you want to know what bothers me more than anything, George, is the number of men who stand around these female reporters and say nothing. That in of itself, because we're not living in normal times, but it really bothers me. It takes me back, and I'll make it a simple, quick story of when I first was the woman in the room for the Canucks. First woman, like they had to be woman in the room when I was coming in to cover right. post game. Cause back then the locker room was the locker room and they were naked. And I had one player who shall remain nameless, who has since apologized, present himself in front of me in a way that was distasteful. And immediately Trevor Linden, captain at the time, came over, put his arm around my shoulder and said, if anybody disrespects Jody that way again, you deal with me. And I'm telling you what, I've been treated unbelievably well by many teams ever since because the man in the room, the most powerful man in the room, stood up for the most vulnerable. I was just, I'm a cub reporter. I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I'm doing my best, right? Like, and this is in the highest office in the United States with some of the most veteran, talented and on point journalists. So thank you for asking me. I want every man in every room to stand up to anybody who talks to women like that. Anyone. It's just the time of bystanding is gone. And I think the Epstein files are going to be a big part of that. Because when we find out, and we will, we're going to find out people on both sides of the aisle and deeply into politics and, or, sorry, celebrity and just, you know, the head of Harvard just had to be like, see ya, I'm out. I'm canceled because I've been friends with the pedophile after knowing he was a pedophile. Like, but there were people that knew that and saw that, and they're going to wear it too. Mm-hmm. That's kind of like, I think that's going to be our lesson that comes out of the Epstein files. Who knew what, when?
And to see that this all turned around in part because of three women that we least suspect would be, you know, the turnaround of Marjorie Taylor Greene. As a from a PR point of view, talk about spin. I was like,
talk
woo.
About spin.
Like, wow, that is not. I did not see that coming. And she became the face of opening this up and getting Republicans on side and getting Trump on side. You know, he knew she. I mean, the data was there. The people were not. The MAGA movement wasn't putting up with it, and he was losing his base because of it. And so he's rolling the dice. And, you know, you see their messaging already. They're saying it's going to be worse for the Democrats and our names aren't in there. It's all Democrats. And that's why I think, you know, that's why this thing's going to be gamed. But, you know, still, that was very impressive. And kudos to her for being the, you know, what was this major Trump supporter going against him. That's impressive. I mean, we all know that can't be easy. And so to those men as well, to your point, I mean, I can't imagine, I feel like I would say, so I would say, excuse me, Mr. President, I don't think that's appropriate to you. Why would you ask, do you think calling a woman that, like, just that would be the next question to ask in that situation. I think it was on a flight, wasn't it? On a plane they did it or something?
The plane and in the MBS availability. He did the quiet piggy was on at the gaggle on Air Force One. And the other, like, who are you? You're a terrible reporter. It's how you ask the question. ABC's fake news, and you're the worst of them, and you should be fired. And that was Mary Bruce.
That quiet piggy, though, that is beyond. That is crazy. That's crazy stuff.
We knew he was crazy when we was mocking disabled reporters. Like,
No.
We are not living in normal times. That is a fact. And we'll see what happens next. Because wouldn't it be something?
Only time will tell.
We're 33 minutes into this podcast, so we got to go. But we'll leave it at the idea that wouldn't it be something if the thing that took Donald Trump down was his emails? Wouldn't it be something?
Full circle.
Follow us on your social media. You can find that guy over there at George_Affleck on your Twitter feed, George Affleck everywhere else. I'm at Jody Vance, Jody with a Y. Follow us, unspunpodcast.com. If you want to watch the craziness, you can see us on YouTube or you can just listen to this podcast every Thursday for 30 minutes and today 33 minutes. But that's how we're rolling today, George.
Our sponsors are going to kill us. Bye.